This Sunday Show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome to the Sunday Show. And this evening we have a very special guest indeed, Eilish O'Carroll. Eilish, of course, people will know you as Winnie McGugan from a little known comedy called Mrs. Brown's Boys. People might have heard of it at some stage. It's a pleasure to have you in. Great to see you. You're looking fabulous and full of health and positivity here, glowing in front of me. How are things being? Have you survived COVID?
I survived COVID. I got COVID actually while we were on tour in the summer, and it was in Cardiff, and I got COVID. Now, thankfully, I didn't get it very bad, but 2 days where it was a little bit uncomfortable, runny nose and so on and so forth. But other than that, absolutely fine. And we've just finished this tour at the Three Arena last weekend, Friday, and two shows on a Saturday. And I gotta say a big thank you to the Dublin audience. I have never seen a response like it. They went wild and actually brought a tear to my eye. It was like, oh my God, they are.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Isn't it great to see people back again, Eilish out, and like, you know, they're so enthusiastic now to have that audience, you know, actor comedian interaction again. And there's nothing like it,
There's nothing like it. And it's great for both of us. And we're just as joyful to be doing it as they are to be listening and receiving it and laughing and clapping. And it's just a lovely exchange of energy. And yeah, we all kind of were walking on air on Saturday night when it finished.
Oh yeah, brilliant.
And I had difficulty walking on air Saturday night because I'd actually had an accident on the Friday. I fell down the steel staircase.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, behind the stage, and badly cut the back of my ankle. But it was too close to the show, so I actually went on the show in a wheelchair on Saturday night.
Oh my goodness.
Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening, I managed to walk with a cane. Needless to say, Brendan made it part of the show, and I was considered a real trooper.
Yeah,
right? So
of
I'm
course.
Delighted about
the
that.
The show must go on.
The show must go. I eventually got it all sorted yesterday. Eventually.
The old acting adage, break a leg, comes to mind.
But oh, I mean, does. Thank and God. I mean, you know, and the lads, the crew were saying, you know, we didn't mean that literally, Eilish. You didn't have to. But anyway, thankfully, I got it.
Well, started. You're walking. You're looking great today, anyway. What a success, Eilish, I suppose, really, Mrs. Brown's Boys. I mean, it was funny when I heard you there when we were chatting. When I met you today, you were saying to me it was an overnight success. It only took 25 years.
It only took 25 years, like,
but it's an incredible phenomenon, isn't it?
It's an incredible success story. And I think what's really incredible is that, like, it went out on the BBC over 11 years ago, if not 12 years ago, and it's still going, right? And I mean, that is amazing. And I think, I'm not sure, but I would imagine for an Irish playwright, which Brendan is obviously, and an Irish play or series of plays, I reckon we're probably the longest theatre group that's been working, right, over 25 years. And the same play, like different titles, obviously, but the same kind of family dynamics and so on and so forth. I think you'll go down in history for it.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, Brendan, I mean, when I was listening to him being interviewed on The Late Late Show in different places, and I mean, the tenacity, perseverance. I mean, it really is. You could make a documentary about that,
you
about
could.
The making of the show and how, I suppose, the perseverance really came across. Like that steely determination to, you know, to get this to the audiences, really.
Yeah. Oh, it is. And he does not have a negative bone in his body. And I think we all, as a family, there was 10 of us. And my mother had a saying that if you throw enough SH1T at a wall, right, someday it has to stick. So you just keep throwing it and throwing it and throwing it. And one day something will stick. And I think Brendan lived to that kind of saying. And he'd fall down and get back up. And he'd fall down and get back up. And he doesn't see problems. He sees opportunities. And so it's great to work with someone like him, because you do actually, you feed off that, you know, and you think, you know, we're going to be okay.
And I mean, growing up, a real Irish family, right? There was 10 children. You were saying 10 brothers and sisters.
Yes.
I mean, that was that where all this fabulous humour originated?
Oh, I actually do think so, because I think certainly for the youngest ones, because myself and Brendan were I was the youngest girl, he was the youngest boy, and then we had obviously brothers and sisters ahead of us. But the last five, which had been myself and Brendan and the twins, had a great sense of humour. And I actually think that was more due to the fact that we were desperate to get mother's attention, right? So you had to be very creative. right? So, and I think that brought out the entertainer in every one of us. And it's like, yeah, I can do that better than you. I can sing and dance better than you. I can tell a joke, you know, that kind of thing. And so I always say, and I say in my own show, I went to the best drama school in the world, right? It was there, and I had a motivation, and the motivation was, look at me, mammy, I want to be the one sitting on your lap.
Wonderful. And when did you decide first, or when did you know first that you had a talent, or that experience that you had when you interacted with an audience? I mean, at what age did it start for you?
Oh, wow. I mean, I started very young, really, in my early teens. I joined and formed a band called The Pentagon. Now, there were five of us originally, and then one dropped out, and there was four of us then, but we didn't bother changing the name. I don't think any of us realised what the Pentagon meant, right? That it was a five-sided...
Wall-to-wall virtue.
Yeah, wall-to-wall, yeah. And I thought, so, well, no, we can still call ourselves The Pentagon. So we started singing in pubs and clubs and, you know, anywhere that would pay enough money to get the bus home. That's what we did. So that was my first kind of real introduction to get on stage professionally. And then when I moved to the UK, I joined a local drama group because I needed to exercise that demon in me. I suppose I had this, you know, and it's a childhood thing, I had this need to be the centre of attention, right? Like we all did as kids. But I never grew up, right? So I thought, no, I need to go on stage here now. I need to have the people going, oh, she's really good, isn't she? So it was always there, I think. And Brendan, I came back from England to Ireland. The first time I came back was 1995, and then I worked with Brendan on his movie The Sparrow's Trap, and then I worked him on various other plays, The Course and Grandad, Sure Lily's Still Alive. And then I would come back and forth and back and forth, and then eventually I made the move and I thought, no, I'm going home. I'm actually going to settle back home. And I came back in 1998, and I haven't looked back since. And in 1999 I was doing wardrobe for Mrs. Brown's Boys. I was not on the stage, right? I was never going to get lucky, I thought. But I was also understudy for all the other female actors. And one week, one of the actors needed to take time out for an RTE production. Now, I'm going to give advice to people who are in any show. Never take time out. Ever.
Yeah, your slot will be taken.
Your slot is taken so fast, right? And so Brendan said to me, look, do you want to come along and actually, you know, no, not come along. I need you to do Winnie McGugan tonight for a few nights this week. And I said, yeah, sure. And I was terrified. And I said, well, can you and I have a rehearsal? He said, yeah, I've turned up 5:30 tomorrow and we'll have a rehearsal before the show goes out. Of course, he never did turn up. I never did get a rehearsal. And I was terrified because at that time I knew that it wasn't the audience I was afraid of. It was the other actors, and I thought they're going to be my biggest critics, so I need to go out there and really, really kind of knock them dead. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, and I mean, I would say to you, it would be one of those, like, you know, for me, it's redolent of some of the Carry On movies, obviously, like, you know, with like the characters, the chemistry between yourself and Brendan then really developed into something like incredible.
Yeah, it has. And I think it's because I know, I don't second guess him, but I know what he's going to do. And Brendan is always one for spontaneity and actually, you know, going off script. We don't go off script, but I know, and I can tell by his eyes,
coming.
I hope he's not listening to this, because I can see this glint in his eye.
He's 6 hours behind.
And I think, yeah, and I think to myself, he's up to something. So I'm a hair's breadth behind him, as any kind of double act, comedy double act should be. You don't match them, you're a hair's breadth behind them. And so I'd always be that hair's breadth, so I'd be ready. And as long as I don't look at him, I can keep it. I don't laugh. I stay in character. If I look at him, I'm finished.
Yeah.
Right? So I have to make sure I see the look in his eye and I go, turn away, because you know he's going to do something totally off, not in the book, and you know he's going to do something and you have to respond. And that's exactly it. And I think it's because we are siblings and we know each other so well that's why it works so well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's funny. I mean, I'm sure he gets great pleasure in putting people off and trying to make them laugh and
totally.
Stuff because, you know, it is something that actors love to do to each other.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like a test. But, I mean, when it started to become a big thing, and then, of course, the BBC and then the figures and the numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been, you guys must have been kind of pinching yourself going, or did you think, oh, my God, we knew it was always
amazing.
No, never knew that. Honestly, never knew that. Because when the BBC showed an interest, they weren't the first television company to show an interest. You know, various ITV had approached Brendan before, Channel 4 had approached, but they all wanted to change it, right? And Brendan wasn't having that. So he said, no. So when the BBC showed an interest and he said to the producer, look, if you're about to change this, we ain't going past first base. And he said, no, I'll pitch it as it is, right? So when we did the pilot in the BBC all those years ago, we were terribly excited because we'd never been in a studio before, right? And we arrived like, you know, a group of Japanese tourists with our cameras and, you know, taking photographs of every BBC sign because we were convinced that was the last time we would ever be in there. We did the pilot and I remember the very last day when we were shooting and Brendan says to us, look, we've had a great week, right? They're not going to take this. There's no way the BBC are going to take this, he said. So I tell you what, if there's any souvenirs that is not nailed down, take them with you because you'll always have a souvenir. So we were taking down our signs and our posters and, you know, and then, as I say, by the Christmas, they said, no, we're not going to, you know, it's a non-starter from the point of view of the pilot, but we actually want a whole series. So that was just, and none of us, again, even when we did it, thought we would get a second series out of it. So, yeah, we were all terribly excited about it. We were all kind of blown away by the figures. And I did pinch myself. I have to say, I still pinch myself every morning that this is as big a success. But it doesn't penetrate, Ed, you know. It doesn't matter how many times people say it to me, it doesn't go into my head. I don't feel, oh my God, aren't we fantastic? I just feel how lucky we are, how blessed we are to have such good fortune. And yeah, and I hope it lasts for a long time now, but nothing lasts forever. And I'm enjoying every time we go back on tour, every minute of it.
Yeah, and it's incredible as well, Eilish, I think, because for a lot of people in Ireland here, I mean, I won't say it was like Marmite, but I watched it and I'm like, oh my God, this is actually funny. And I'd heard people saying,
yeah,
oh, that I don't like that Irish humour at all.
Yes.
And then I had first cousins living in the UK and they were like, have you seen this? It's Brown's Boys. Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And you know, like, and then, but I actually love that slapstick comedy as well. Yeah. So for me, I thought it was genius. And then other people were like, oh God, no, I could. That was very interesting about it, wasn't it?
Wasn't it? Yeah. It's not everybody's cup of tea. There's no midway in Mrs. Brown's Boys. You either like it or you hate it. You don't go, well, kind of, yeah, sometimes I watch and sometimes I don't. It'll either appeal to you or it won't. I think what I love about it, and I still obviously watch the reruns and so on and so forth, and I couldn't watch them initially because I couldn't watch myself, right? I was too close to it still and I was too critical. But now when I see it, something that we recorded 4 or 5 years ago and I watch it, now I know what's coming, Ed. I know exactly what's coming and I'm laughing before it comes. Obviously, it appeals to me as well. I love his quick-wittedness. I love his, you know, I mean, to me, he's a comic genius. I have to say, and I know he's my brother, but I do separate the brother from the performer, and I am so lucky to be working with a comic genius like him, and I've learned so much, and I think we were both lucky, you know, and my other siblings lucky that we have that funny bone in us anyway, and it just needed to be nurtured. It needed to kind of escape, and yeah, and I've been one of those lucky ones that, yeah, here it is, I can do it. Yeah.
This Sunday show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday Show with my guest, Eilish O'Carroll. I really liked what you were saying there earlier about Brendan and, you know, comic genius, because I think the timing, we all know comedy timing is very important. And it seems to me that you and probably himself could do master classes, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and timing is extremely important. And, you know, and that's why even, you know, and I've had to learn it because I have the habit of actually adding a little bit to a line. And I don't mean to, but, you know, it kind of comes out naturally. But when it comes to comedy, you can't do that. So, you know, I'm a line feeder. That's how I see Winnie McGugan. You feed him the line. You feed him the punchline in particular, right? And if I add little bits to that, it can kill the punchline. So from that point of view, I've learned. And I mean, you know what I've also learned, Ed, is that success is all about timing. And when Mrs. Brown's Boys first went out all those years ago, but 12 years ago now, we were in a global recession. And the thing two things that really sell well in a recession are comedy and nostalgia, and both of which make them feel good. Nostalgia is about comfort and familiarity, and comedy is about actually shifting that negative, depressive feeling that you're in. And I think we were just so lucky that that timing was right. In the universe, went, yeah, that's what the world needs at the moment, and you fit the bill. So yeah, timing. And I've often thought about giving classes on comedy, and then I think, don't be silly. You're not qualified to give. Classes on comedy.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely something you should look at. But what I love as well is, I mean, your character and Agnes, like, they're like real people. Okay, they're like, and I think they're almost like people people would say, I know, I have an Agnes up the road.
You all have a mammy or a nanny or a granny or a next door neighbour that just is the image of Winnie, and likewise the image of Agnes. So I think it portrays these two friends. Now, Winnie gets a very hard time from Agnes, as you can see. And I've known friends who do that to friends, right? You know, put them down and, what would you know, and all that kind of thing. But Winnie has to respond as if it is going over her head. Eilish, on the other hand, does not respond to things like that. But Winnie,
Eilish is very intelligent.
I have to remind myself that this is Winnie. And there are times when I think, when he says something, and I think, I'm going to punch you. I'm going to punch your lights up. And I'm going, no, you can't. You have to. Winnie has to react, not Eilish. And
yeah. Now, I mean, you could talk about so many episodes, but the Christmas, we're coming up to Christmas now, Eilish. And I mean, that episode of the Christmas tree flying around and the sticky stuff. I mean, that was, I nearly fell off the floor. I nearly fell onto the floor, whatever. That was just something else. Yes. I mean, no matter, the most hardened of cynics would have to have laughed.
Oh, you'd have to laugh at that. I mean, you know.
That was amazing.
And again, there's no dialogue necessary. This is all visual comedy. And I think that's, again, his gift, that it ticks all boxes, you know. And as he always said himself, intellectually, you don't need a degree to understand Agnes Brown, right? This is all about, it is a little bit slapstick, I agree with you. It's almost bordering at times on panto, right? But the characters are so real that you actually go, that could actually happen, right? Yeah. That really could actually happen. And I love, you know, again, the physical comedy, because it is so funny. Nothing's been said. It's all in the expression, or it's all in the action that they're doing. And the Christmas tree going round, and when he doesn't have a stunt person in, right? He's
He loved it.
The other way. And I'm going, he's going to break his neck. He's actually,
he was in Disneyland there for a while. Yeah. Brilliant. But I mean, that is the other thing that I suppose, you know, the inspiration. I mean, when you came to writing all those episodes, I mean, was it a very sort of consultative process?
No, Brendan doesn't consult.
Yeah. So
it's all in his head. He sees it. I mean, he'll see something funny, maybe in, you know, if he's out shopping, or he'll hear somebody say something, and Brendan can actually make an episode out of, you know, one tiny situation, and he could actually write a whole episode around it. He's just a naturally funny guy. So yeah, no, but you know. And no, I think he consults from the point of view of when it needs editing, or you know, do you think this will work? And obviously we're talking about any audience, you know, is this PC? Because one thing Agnes is not is PC.
And that was something that was very interesting as well, because it was widely reported that it was the Queen's favourite programme, and she would never miss it. And you know, that was, and she was known actually to be a really good impersonator of accents herself, actually, which people didn't know.
Yeah.
But that was really, I thought that was quite interesting for people when they kind of heard that, wow, like that's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and I believe, and I don't know if it's a rumour, Ed, but not only was she a fan of the show, but the BBC would actually send her early copies so that she could actually watch the show at her leisure. And, you know, we used to joke, well, she's busy doing her own speech at the time, isn't she? I mean, she can't watch us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the BBC, I'm sure they couldn't say no to her anyway, you know?
It was very interesting to hear that and read about it. And I thought, but, you know, is it paper talk? Who knows? I actually don't know. But certainly I thought, well, she has taste.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, what's fascinating as well is, of course, I mean, it became, I'm not saying a franchise, but, you know, I mean, you've got the shows, you've got the whole, now it's a huge phenomenon, not just, of course, on television.
Yeah.
And I mean, do you think it's going to just keep going, or what's the plans?
I actually don't know. I mean, you know, we finished, as I say, on Saturday. There may be a tour next year, but nothing's been confirmed. There is talk doing 4 new episodes of Mrs. Brown's Boys for the BBC. Again, haven't had the dates to see. I never believe anything until they give me the plane ticket.
It's like Downton Abbey now.
Until I get the plane ticket and I go, there's my flight details. I'm actually, yeah, we are going to work. So, I mean, I really would love to think that there's more longevity in it. And every year for the last 5 years, I have been saying this is the last year because it can't go on any further. And what happens? Another trip. Great. This is the last year though, guys. And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm kind of trying to prepare myself, right? Because, you know, things do end, right? So, but it is huge in Australia. It is huge in America now. It is, there's all the European countries. It's been translated into
I'd love to see it in German. I'd say that'd be great.
The one you have to see, and I think it was Romania, I think.
Yeah, right? I wouldn't but understand much of that now.
If you go on YouTube, you'll find a clip, right? Yeah. And it's hysterical. And of course, they're by the rights to do it, and they have to have the characters in, right?
Yeah.
Now, they can change the script, but they have to have the characters. And the guy who plays Mrs. Brown's Boys...
I have to watch that.
And Winnie is dressed as a French maid.
A bit like you are today here.
Yeah, just like Winnie. I am now, yeah.
Do you know what was very interesting as well? I mean, I've been going to the Trocadero restaurant here. I suppose it's one of those iconic places everybody loves if you've any thespianism in you at all.
Yes.
And Robert Doggett, who's a great character, of course, synonymous with the Trocadero for years.
Yeah.
Well, he, of course, obviously was a good friend of mine. But when Robert appeared, I was...
Brown's Boys.
Yeah. I was like, what's happening here? That was an amazing... I thought that was so clever to do that. But Robert was brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. And I think, and again, you got to congratulate Brendan, right? Because as he said, you know, people are in danger of taking themselves too seriously because you have to have proper actors and you have to have this and you have to. And actually what he does, he contradicts all of those theories and people love it. I mean, the public love it that, you know, we have someone like Robert who I think played blinder. Now, this guy,
he was a natural.
He's never been on stage. Never mind.
He loved
TV.
Yeah, and Duck to Water comes to mind. Duck a l'Orange, maybe,
yes,
Robert.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Brilliant. And, I mean, what was clever about that as well, I think, is just that people, the characters came and went, but you always had your permanent exhibition,
yeah,
and that's what you do. And that, again, of course, is always very difficult to do.
Yeah.
But it was very successful as well, I think.
Very.
You know, people had a journey with them.
Yeah, yeah. And we had, didn't we have Joe Duffy on one Christmas as well? When he was a medium, he was held a seance.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I heard Joe was great for the tarot cards, actually. Yeah. He's brilliant. Does a few free readings out in Clontarf.
I tell you, we've had some great characters on.
Amazing.
As guests, yeah.
Now, just to go back to yourself, Eilish, you lived in Cork for 20-odd years.
I did, yes.
I mean, amazing. Was that like a sort of another life for you?
Well, it was another life. I think you put it really well, Ed, because I actually went to Cork. My sister was living in Bantry at the time when I kind of came back to Ireland. And I'd been back in about 98 and I wanted to buy in Dublin. But to be honest with you, you can imagine... Every time I went to see a house in Dublin, it went up 20 grand. So I went to Kildare, went to Wexford. The same thing was happening. So eventually I was in West Cork with my sister and I said, look, I'm going to go up to Skibbereen. If I find nothing this weekend, I'm going back to England. Found a lovely little cottage and I moved in. Now, at the time I was running away from my life. I know that now. I mean, if somebody had said that's what you're doing, I would have said, don't be ridiculous. But I was running away from my life. And I imagine a place to run away to, you know, the backside of nowhere. And here I am in West Cork, completely alone. And I've never been alone in my life. I never, you know, had a bed to myself in my entire life. So here I have a bed and a house and all of that. But it transpired it was the best move I ever made because I made such wonderful friends in West Cork. And the people in West Cork will always be dear to my heart. And West Cork is almost like, well, Cork in general would be my second home.
I suppose I can't disagree with that.
Really is my second home. Yeah. I love their sense of humour. And when I was able to understand what they were saying, especially in West Cork, because, you know, it's very melodic, you know.
It's very fast, Eilish, as you go west.
Oh, isn't it? You know, I mean, the speed, it's sped.
Yeah. Goline comes to mind now.
Exactly.
I didn't understand. And we went on holidays there. I didn't know what anyone was saying.
I meet people and I had a love. It was absolutely in gorgeous position. And I used to have beautiful walk around the peninsula. You'd never see a soul. But when you did, you know, they know everything about you. You didn't know anything about them. And they go, "Where are you?"
Yeah. There's a great program.
You're Brendan Carroll's sister, aren't you? And then I remember I'm giving them all the information. And I said, "So where do you live?" And they go, "Oh, up above or down below."
Yeah.
You never got exactly where they were. Now, that didn't mean to say that they weren't caring. They were extremely caring, and they really did look after me. And when I was away a lot, they were really taking care of the house. So,
and it was very interesting then was when I saw you on Dancing with the Stars, right? I thought, "Where there she is now." And Winnie, but of course, as yourself, I thought Winnie would have been great as well. By the way,
I think Winnie would have been better because she probably would have got more votes.
How was that? What was that like? I mean, the training was pretty hard.
It was, but it was great fun to do. I mean, I really did enjoy it. There was no doubt about that. But actually, on reflection, I think if they'd put rollers in my hair and a hairnet, I probably would have gone a bit further than I did, right? and I wouldn't have minded that, right? But yeah, the training was good. You know, my dance partner was terrific. Everybody was wonderful. I mean, you know, again, you're in that situation. It's reality TV, you know, and everybody is kind of has everybody else's back, right?
Yeah. Ryan was great.
And some of them even have knives, you know, in your back. But that's
Oh, you know, it's slightly competitive, all right.
Oh, slightly. No, Ryan McShane was fantastic, really brilliant. So we in fact, he, as I saw him just before when we were in Belfast, when we were doing the show in Belfast. So he's doing really well for himself. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to break into new stuff, isn't it? Because, I mean, with a character like Winnie that you've done, how many years,
Eilish? 20 years.
I mean, there's a slight risk of being typecast, isn't there?
Well, there's a huge risk of being typecast because it's like, you know, please, I love comedy, don't get me wrong, but I also love drama, right? And I would love to do a drama piece. I would love to do radio. I would love to, there's so much that people say to me, you know, what's your plans in life? There's so much I want to do. I hope I don't run out of time, right? You know, and I'm in an industry, thankfully, where age doesn't seem to be a barrier, right? Now, I'm not going to get the leading lady in a movie with, you know, drop dead gorgeous fella, but you know, that doesn't bother me. I could play the grandmother though, right?
Yeah, I think things have changed so much, haven't they? When you look at movies now, you look at the likes of Meryl Streep, and look at all these, Charlotte Rampling. I mean, things have changed so much, haven't they?
And it's great to see it change because you don't get less talented as you get older.
No,
you
wiser and more sage.
I think you get wiser, you get less, I suppose, less wrapped up in yourself, right? You don't take life too seriously because you realise that, well, there's no point. Yeah, so you've an awful lot to give as you get older, I think. So, yeah, and you have the confidence which you didn't have as a younger person.
Yeah.
And you have the attitude of c'est la vie. If it's meant to be, it's meant to be.
This Sunday show with Ed Finn with Germany.travel. Feel inspired by Germany. Your adventure awaits.
Sunshine 106.8.
And you're very welcome back to the Sunday show with my special guest, Eilish O'Carroll. And I'm having a very enjoyable show here chatting to Eilish. Of course, you write as well.
Yes.
You know, you do stand-up comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you were saying to us there earlier, Eilish, you're not sure maybe what the future holds, but what exciting things are you planning for 2023?
Well, I'm hoping...
You love that question.
Yes, I love that question. 2023, God. I'm hoping, obviously, to put my show back on again, do a small tour in Ireland of Live, Love, Laugh. So that would be, you know, and I love doing that. I kind of refer to as a play in a handbag, you know. I can actually take it out of the wardrobe and give it a little bit of shake and off you go again. And I love performing it, I must admit. So that's one thing. And the rest, really, I'm just going to kind of hope that the universe will actually, I love universal energy, and I put it out there, listen, guys, I want to do, you know, a nice, really good meaty drama piece. I also want to do some radio. I want to do this, that and the other. So yeah, whatever comes my way, I will embrace it.
And I think I had the wonderful Irish playwright Deirdre Kinahan on last week, mm-hmm. Eilish. And I mean, the amount of women now that are involved in writing and theatre and in art, I mean, it seems that things have really, you know, expanded and opportunities now more than ever before.
Well, I think so. And it's near time, to be honest with you, because there were always that amount of women writers, but they weren't getting a look in. It was as simple as that, purely because they were women. So that mindset has changed, thankfully. So, yeah, and I hope it continues to do that. So, because there are some brilliant writers out there who need to be heard and need to get published and need to be seen, all of that kind of thing.
There's something great about, I mean, I suppose we know it ourselves, but other people, when they come to Ireland, they love our sense of humour. I mean, you were talking about how you lived in London. Like, yeah. You know, you've got like Sharon Horgan, Graham Norton. You know, I could go on with the list. So many people that have been successful. What do you think, it's just something that's in our psyche, or is it something that's unique to our country and just what's happened to us, I suppose, over the years?
I think so. I think our history has a huge impact on us. And I think most oppressive nations, right, and we were oppressed, find a way of survival techniques. And I think Ireland's survival techniques was its humour, its sense of humour. Also, its ability to entertain each other. Right, to tell amazing stories. And now all of these stories, hopefully, or are going into print, right? I mean, I used to go to one in West Cork where just people used to get together. It was a story night, right? And some of the stories were just, they should be put in a book, right? You'd laugh. They were about real life. They were about history. They were about, you know, the famine. It was just absolutely amazing. And I think Ireland is very unique in that way, is that we actually, I suppose, had so little, but we entertained ourselves, right? And that was our way of keeping ourselves sane.
Yeah, I think that's very true. We were never about kind of accumulations of great wealth, but we were kind of a lot about experiences.
Absolutely.
And that's, as you said,
absolutely,
from where we were brought up.
Yeah.
Do you think yourself that now, I suppose, with all the changes, I mean, that you've seen, I mean, do you think we've kind of, have we learned a lot? You'd wonder when you see what's in the news recently. And I know, I mean, that it was recently reported that yourself, that you're going to be going up the aisle again. Is that all happening?
Well, I'm delighted that the change, and I'm delighted that we now have equal marriage. It was a long time coming. And it happened in a very short period of time. And by that, I mean people's attitudes changed in a very short period of time. So they overwhelmingly voted for same-sex marriage. And I remember campaigning during that period. And I would have said to you, it's never going to happen, guys. Never going to happen. And I was really shocked when I would start on Saturday morning and to watch people in Dublin Castle, outside Dublin Castle. I mean, it did bring a tear to my eye. Well, I followed, I campaigned because I believe in rights for everybody. Everybody should have the same right and opportunity in our country. It's our birthright. However, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to put this into words, but I'm very happy and I have a wonderful partner in Marion for over 20 years now. And we are very, very happy together. However, we're both getting on. And which means one of us or both of us are actually going, our demise is closer to us than it was when we first met. OK, so I want to make sure that she's taken care of after my demise. And she wants to do the same. But the law doesn't cover that as we live as common law spouses. We have to get married in order to protect each other. That's the only way we're going to do it. So when I was asked the question, the reason I would give for getting married was, yeah, to protect my partner in law, yes, that might be an option. Now, we've said the words, we still haven't done anything about it, but yes.
But I mean, I think it's lovely. I mean, even though I think a lot of people, like you said, campaigned for equality and probably thought that they'd never actually avail of it. But
absolutely.
Of course, and that was, which was incredible, I think, that everybody kind of came out and it just became about equality.
Absolutely.
And all those other things. Irish people are quite intelligent in that respect, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah.
And I think that was just so nice because it was just saying, look, we're all equal.
Yeah.
And I thought that was lovely. But do you want to take messages now when you're going to write for the future? You're going to hopefully write plays yourself. You're going to have a little bit of time, maybe.
Absolutely.
Are you going to, is that something that you've plans for now? Have you got anything in your mind?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm continuously writing, Ed. You know, I mean, you know, it might be two or three pages in one day and then it gets put into a box and then another story comes to me and I go, yeah, I'll do that and so on and so forth. I'd love to write a play about my mother, right? Because she was absolutely an amazing woman. And I have kind of drafted it, but again, done nothing with it. You know, there's, and yes, about my own life in so much as, this because I have lived several lives in one lifetime, as I think most women do, right? And although my own show, which actually covers it, I'm talking about me, and is all about me, folks, I'm talking about myself. And I remember when my son came to see it, both of my sons came over to see it, and I was pretty anxious because it's a very personal and it's a very honest, right, story that I tell. Plus, it's very funny. So it has it all in there. But my sons had never heard some of the bits from my life, and I was a bit embarrassed, and I thought, I wonder how they're actually going to take it. Well, thankfully, they were so proud of me and said, Mum, we knew all of this. You just thought we didn't, but we knew all of this. And I remember saying to my son, all you've done, Mum, is you've given a snapshot of your life. That's all people have seen. You haven't given your life. He said, in 10 years' time, and it's 12 years since I wrote it, in 10 years' time, he said, you'll have a completely different story to tell. You'll have a lot more to say. And he's dead right, right? Because there is an awful lot more there that needs to come out. Hopefully I'll put it in a novel form, because I find it very hard to write about me in the first person. So I think I might invent someone like Winnie, right? Or let's talk about Winnie's story. Right, so I'll say, okay, it'll be Winnie writing this. Does that make sense?
I think that would be wonderful. Yeah, yeah. I think that would be, because, you know, that would be great. Because I think half the country would love to go for a glass of sherry with Winnie and Agnes.
Oh, they would. Absolutely.
It would be just, and Winnie and her own, you know, and the, you know, Winnie's story would Winnie's, be would be Winnie's fabulous, wouldn't
would
it?
Be, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's all there, and I'm just so lucky, and I will hopefully have a bit more time than I have had to actually really get myself organised and be a bit more, pay a bit more attention to it, you know, give myself the time.
Mindfulness, that's the wonderful word.
Isn't it, mindfulness?
Eilish, everyone's doing mindfulness now, yeah. How to focus, yeah, yeah. So that's it.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard I know you love music.
Yes, I do.
You could have your own show, I'm told. You could have your own music show, no problem at all.
I love that, yeah.
And you love cooking as well?
Yeah, I do love cooking, but I hate following recipes. So I like being creative, you know. And I like putting the tastes in that I like.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So I go, no, I only need a handful of this and a handful of that and a hand. And invariably, it turns out pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. Winnie can have a cookbook as well.
There
Isn't
you
great?
Go. Winnie's cookbook. There you go.
And you bought it. I loved the story about you got your little dog. I mean, a few years ago. Jacko
is.
That was good because you were on your own at the time.
I was.
A lot of people...
And it was funny because I'd always wanted a dog, but I hadn't been able to because I travel so much, right? Then we get the pandemic and we're all stuck indoors. And the first round, when we're all, you know, imprisoned, I thought, this is fun. I started cleaning the house, floors were spotless, everything. You could actually eat off my floor, it was that clean. And there were times you couldn't eat off my table, right? And I thought, but then after about 3 weeks, I'm bored now. And I'm thinking, no. What am I going to do now? And I thought, I'm definitely going to get a dog. And I said to Marion, you know, I'm going to get a dog. Oh, I'll die on you and you're heartbroken. So I said, no, I'm definitely going to get a dog. She said, I don't want a dog. I said, and you're not getting a dog. I'm getting the dog. So what happened was, obviously, we were kind of 24-7 together. And one morning I got up and I thought, I just can't look at her anymore. And I'm sure she can't look
That's
at me.
That's the dog now, is it?
No, not the dog. And I
Sorry,
said,
Marion.
You know, and I said very politely, I said, maybe it's time you went back home to Cork City.
Yeah, I think a few people went through that with lockdown.
Now, I was very lucky that Marion had Cork City to go back to. When I hadn't finished the sentence and her little bag was packed and she was in the car and she was going down the motorway. And I'm going, she wanted to do this.
The best thing out of Dublin is the road to
absolutely.
Cork.
Absolutely. So, and we both talked about it later. And I said, you know, why didn't you just say I need space? Because I needed the space, you needed the space. And she said, you know, I couldn't walk Fairview Park anymore. And that night I went down to Carlow and I bought a dog and I brought him home and he was gorgeous. He was 8 weeks old and I decided to call him Jacko because he's a cross between a Jack Russell and a Maltese. So I brought him back and got on WhatsApp to Marion and I said, listen, if someone I want you to meet, and I showed him the dog. So I couldn't really judge by her reaction, right? But anyway, I knew she'd fall in love with the dog. This dog is spoiled rotten. And she looks And I go, but you didn't, this is the woman who didn't want a dog. What are you doing? You didn't want the dog. We both fell in.
Always happens.
And he is such great company, and he's got a lovely temperament, would go with anybody, a bit like myself. He has an awful lot to say for himself as well. And again, a bit like myself. And yeah, he's really settled
in. I can see him. He'll be in the show soon, I'd say.
Oh, I'd have him there now.
Cameo.
Yes.
Your new play that you were talking about there earlier, when do you hope now?
Well,
what's
I'm hoping
the plan?
March time. I mean, I haven't, you know, I want to do it. I want to set up another tour. So I'm hoping that I'll actually start it in March. And it's called Live, Love, Laugh. And I'm going to have that pendant that my sister, Lord Rester gave me 40-odd years ago. And that was her motto at the time. And that was before any of the Live, Love, Laugh stuff is out on, you know, posters and God knows what else. And when I was coming up with a name for the play, and I thought, well, it's about my life, it's about my loves, and it's about laughter. And that was the name we gave the play. It's, as I say, it's very inspirational. It's very honest. It's extremely funny. So I'm told, this is feedback I'm getting. It's extremely funny, extremely real, brutally honest.
Wonderful. And you promised me now you'll come back and talk to us about all of that in March, because I'm looking forward. I'd love to see that. It sounds fabulous.
Absolutely. And thank you for the invitation. I will be phoning you, Ed, to come back and talk to you about it in March.
Well, listen, Eilish, I'd just like to say thanks a million for all the laughs and for bringing Winnie to the world.
Thank you.
And to Brendan as well. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this evening. And happy Christmas.
Thank you. And happy Christmas to you, Ed. And enjoy your Christmas dinner.
I will. Down in Cork.
Down in Cork.
Thanks, Eilish.
Cheers, my love.